Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're going to talk in just a minute to Krista Tippett, host of the public radio program Speaking of Faith. She's got a new book called Einstein's God and an event in New York that we'll tell you about. But first, we want to follow up on the last time Krista was on, which was to compare Christianity and Buddhism after Brit Hume used his platform on Fox News Sunday to try to convert Tiger Woods. Remember?
The extent to which he can recover, it seems to me, depends on his faith. He's said to be a Buddhist. I don't think that faith offers the kind of forgiveness and redemption that is offered by the Christian faith. So my message to Tiger would be, Tiger, turn your faith, turn to the Christian faith, and you can make a total recovery and be a great example to the world.
So that was last month. Then last Friday, when Tiger Woods did his public apology media event, little noticed by most of the media, was these little lines tucked into his spiel.
People probably don't realize it, but I was raised a Buddhist, and I actively practiced my faith from childhood until I drifted away from it in recent years. Buddhism teaches that a craving for things outside ourselves causes an unhappy and pointless search for security. It teaches me to stop following every impulse and to learn restraint. Obviously, I lost track of what I was taught.
Tiger Woods from last Friday and Krista Tippett, host of public radio Speaking of Faith and author of a really wonderful new book called Einstein's God, Conversations About Science and the Human Spirit. Welcome back to WNYC. Hi, Krista.
Hi, I'm happy to be with you, as always.
And after our conversation last month, did you notice that Tiger gave America a little glimpse into Buddhism and Buddhist philosophy tucked into his media event there?
Well, you know, it's interesting how Tiger opened, Tiger and Brit Hume together became the occasion for people to talk about Buddhism,
yeah,
actually in a substantive way. But I'm not sure that people should look to Tiger Woods if they really want to understand that tradition.
Right. I mean, personally, I thought that was a direct response to Brit Hume, though he didn't mention him by
mm-hmm.
name, and was for me
mm-hmm.
anyway more interesting than anything about his marriage. Any thoughts from you, though, seriously, before we move on from this, about this as a teachable moment for America, if this is what it takes to get them interested in the question, including Fox News viewers, about some tenets of Buddhism and what he was saying there specifically about craving or a pointless search for security?
Well, what it reminds me of are a lot of conversations that we've had in the last year with the economic downturn, because these ideas that come out of Buddhism about craving, or kind of a reality-based, everything is ephemeral, and all you can control is yourself in the present moment, and you do have that control. I mean, that's also a place where a lot of people found some wisdom in just getting sane in the middle of what felt like our economic life falling apart. So it has been a demonstration of that, and you're right, it's a very high-profile demonstration of that, and kind of an unexpected place to be learning about spiritual traditions.
Right. I think they say he's one of the top three recognizable faces in the world. And there he was speaking
yeah.
about this. All right. Your new book, which I actually read a lot of yesterday and this morning, is really wonderful. It's called Einstein's God, Conversations About God and the Human Spirit. It's you in dialogue with people like Sherwin Nuland, Esther Sternberg, James Moore, Mehmet Oz, V.V. Raman, people whose work is on that edge between science and spirit. What are you
mm-hmm.
trying to do?
I'm not only unconvinced by the science-religion debate as we've conducted over the last few years, I think it's boring, and I think it has distracted us from the really interesting places we have to talk about, where scientific thinking, scientific discoveries, and inquiry, it's not that scientific answers and religious answers work together or are the same. That's not the point. That's not interesting. But where a lot of questions that are being raised in these different spheres of human life that address different aspects of what it means to be human are wonderfully evocative and, you know, more than compatible. And there are also people in the book, Brian, like Freeman Dyson and Jana Levin, who's a New York theoretical physicist at Barnard, mm-hmm. who are not religious people themselves at all, but still the kinds of questions they're raising through physics, the kinds of questions that are being raised through neuroscience, these are theologically and philosophically and spiritually evocative. And that's what I'm interested in teasing out and putting out there.
One fascinating concept that I had no idea about before is from your conversation with V.V. Raman, whose mother tongue is Tamil. And he
says, he's a Hindu physicist. Yeah.
Right. And he says that language has two different words for why. One is the scientific why as a cause and effect question. The other is why as an investigation of purpose. Can you tease that out a little?
Well, again, you know, the way we've tended to talk about science and religion in the same breath in recent years is as two competing sets of answers. And in fact, these are two disciplines for pursuing knowledge, for pursuing understanding, for pursuing truth, but they're asking different questions, even if they're looking at the same phenomenon. Science is asking, you know, again, the causative why, and religion is asking the purpose of the purposeful why. Well, what does this mean? What do we do with this? I mean, Einstein even, and you know, this is a forgotten part of Einstein's legacy was how he mused on these things. Didn't have any kind of traditional faith, but here's one way he put it. He said, science is good at describing what is. It's not so good at describing what should be. And he would point at his contemporary Gandhi, who he much admired, and what he called the spiritual geniuses of the ages, the Buddha, Jesus, Moses. And he insisted that humankind needed that the purveyors of spiritual truth, of that kind of moral reasoning, as much as it needed the purveyors of scientific truth. So, although he didn't force any harmony between the two realms, and that's also what goes wrong.
So,
and I'm not interested in doing that.
You're not trying to force any harmony between the two realms?
I'm not. I mean, you know, I think about half the scientists in the book are religious in some sense, and half of them are not. I don't think the interesting question is whether scientists themselves are religious or should be. For a lot of scientists, that's just not the question, right? There's incredible reverence for the laws of physics, for the laws of nature. A lot of scientists will tell you that, sure, what they know might leave open the possibility of, you know, a phrase that Einstein used, a mind behind the universe, an intelligence behind the universe. I think for a lot of them, wrapping up that question, putting the name God on it, is just not that interesting to them. But as I say, they're still raising really interesting questions and insights that all the rest of us can use, even for spiritual nourishment and intrigue.
And how interesting that as everybody was calling Einstein a genius in his day, that he coined that phrase spiritual genius that you were referring to talk about Gandhi and some others. And you have the physician, Sherwin Nuland, who is Jewish, who has spent much of his life studying what he calls one of the most remarkable things in nature, the 3-pound human brain. And maybe for me, his work is the most threatening to religious thought, because he is deconstructing the biochemistry of emotion, the biochemistry of morality, specific chemical processes that are behind our feelings and our values. If it's all biochemistry, where's the God or even the spirituality in that?
Yeah, he believes that what we call the spirit is an evolved through through the evolution of the brain. So as the brain, the human brain, makes order out of chaos, you know, which is the great creative act in Genesis, the original creative act, as we make sense, as we become more conscious, he believes that spirit emerged biologically. But, you know, and you're right, and he's not religious, and that's not where his investigations have taken him. There's a way in which he... Just one thing that he does right on the surface is makes us think differently, I think, even more reverently about just this biological organ that the brain is, how amazing it is, how complex our bodies are. Like Sherwin Nuland wrote his early book that he was quite famous for, How We Die. But he also then later started talking about the amazing discovery, or just to dwell on the fact of what it means that we have health and life moment to moment, how incredible that is. So again, you know, there's this reverence there that you don't have to tie up with a word like God. One thing I was able to point out to him, though, is that the Hebrew word for soul, nefesh, is quite different. It's a quite different concept than the Christian word or the Christian notion of soul. Hmm. Nefesh has an emergent property, and it emerges in relationship. It's not something individual and abstract and separate. And there's a way in which, as I talked to Sherwin Nuland, I felt that concept, that it was very evocative with that concept. And I shared that with him. And, you know, that was a really wonderful conversation that we've had. And he has corresponded with me since and said that it really got him thinking and was a great moment. And again, I don't think that he has any need to tie that up or to say he's going to become a religious person. But it is intriguing for him to realize that something we might call a religious question is also raised in his work.
Krista Tippett, host of Public Radio Speaking of Faith, my guest on WNYC. Her new book is called Einstein's God, Conversations About Science and the Human Spirit. She will be having a related event in New York coming up soon in conversation with Andrew Solomon, who's one of the people she speaks with in the book. That'll be Wednesday, March 3rd at 7 o'clock at the New York Public Library. Is that the main branch with the Lions?
It is the main branch with the Lions, and it's the beautiful Celeste Bartos Forum.
And that, again, Krista Tippett with Andrew Solomon, Wednesday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. at the New York Public Library. Let's see, a listener on our comments page says, Einstein sought out Catholic priests to discuss the doctrine of the Eucharist. It fascinated him. He had a great religious wonder. Are you aware of that? Is that an actual fact?
I was actually not aware of that. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, Einstein had this delving curiosity, right? He wanted to understand. He talked about how his whole life had been a pursuit to understand the order deeply hidden behind everything. And so it doesn't surprise me that if the Eucharist captured his attention the speed of light captured his attention, that he would then pursue it and ask questions simply for the sake of understanding.
And even about the nature of religion and Einstein, you write that Einstein became more connected to his Judaism as he lived, but fixating not on religion as something divine or supernatural, rather on religion as informing a life well lived. And frankly, I think that's where you are, too.
Where I am, too? Oh, boy, that's a big conversation.
After reading this book. But
yeah, Einstein loved the ethical core of Judaism. And I also love that practical reality-based core of religion that has gotten short shrift. And so I don't know. I think you're spurring me to think about something. But I suppose having a conversation in my book, which is bringing together scientific and religious insights, yeah, which is really bringing together the transcendent and the logical, maybe part of my pursuit too.
So just one more thing on this, because so much of the shallow debate between science and religion revolves around the first line of Genesis, which says God created the heavens and the earth. But James Moore, who wrote about Darwin, tells you that reading Genesis seriously is actually an antidote to the polarized science versus religion debate.
Oh,
how so?
James Moore, and he's incredible, and most of the scientists I've spoken with across the years. I mean, Darwin needs to be re-remembered, okay? We've misremembered Darwin, just like we don't remember a lot about Einstein. Darwin saw creation, and that was a word he used, as an unfolding reality. And actually, Brian, if you look at the Hebrew, the language at the beginning of Genesis is actually in the beginning of God's creating. It's actually something that is ongoing. And you know, I remember talking to an astrophysicist early this year who was one of the fathers of plate tectonic theory, devoutly Catholic also, and a great scientist.
And we have under a minute, Krista.
Okay, and he said, evolution is ingenious. And, you know, that's what I've heard from a lot of scientists. And it's that perspective on all this that I'd love to see more in our common perception of these things. Because science and religion are both so important to us understanding what it means to be human, which is the great question of life.
Krista Tippett, host of Speaking of Faith, heard here on WNYC on the weekends and on public radio around the country, is now the author of Einstein's God, Conversations About Science and the Human Spirit. And she will be at the New York Public Library in conversation with Andrew Solomon Wednesday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. Krista, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we're going to follow up shortly with kind of an addendum to this conversation having to do with a book called Plato's Podcasts. So stay tuned.